Welcome along to the D Word podcast, where our focus this week is invisible. A survey of dementia carers compiled in 2023 by the charity Dementia Carers Count. My guest is their head of policy and campaigns, Helen Piper. Well, Helen, it's a pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. We're going to be talking about the Dementia Carers Count survey and some really interesting findings, I must say. But before we get into that, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your role there at Dementia Carers Count?
Yes, of course. And thanks so much for inviting me onto the show. I'm Helen. I'm head of policy and campaigns at Dementia Carers Count. So my role is very much about establishing an evidence base and positions on if issues that affect dementia carers. And we also campaign for change to improve the support that dementia carers receive. The annual survey you've referred to is a fairly new thing. We've now done it twice, and it's just been invaluable in helping us to understand where carers are at the moment, to understand their priorities and their challenges right now. Looking forward to chatting to you about that.
Yeah, was it right that 1,300 carers was it you reached out to, or round about that number?
Yeah, just over 1,300. Responded to our survey to tell us. And they were carers of been caring for different amounts of time, caring for different people. So we had a very good variety of experiences that people were sharing with us.
And, you were talking about looking for an evidence base. Well, wow, having read it, you've certainly got an evidence base there. Lots of information there. I tell you, the thing that really impressed me is right at the beginning, you've got those really strong infographics that bring it all out. And even for those people that don't want to read the text, I mean, you can look at those infographics and, you've almost got your evidence base there.
Yeah. I must thank my colleague Rob for putting them together. He did a brilliant job on bringing to life some of those statistics and really trying to represent what carers are telling us at the moment. So, all kudos to him.
Now, I think, what carers are telling you at the moment is kind of unfortunately probably what we all surmise they might be telling you in the issues. And just, I'll just draw out a few stats. So first of all, it's there, it's on your website, it's PDFable, it's completely easy to read as well. So I would, urge everybody that's listening to go and have a look. But when you do have a look, you'll find some of these statistics, like 89% of carers have reached crisis at least once, which is, sounds horrendous, really. I mean, people reach crisis. Is this because there's just nobody to turn to?
Absolutely. I think there's several reasons, as I'm sure you can imagine. I think there is no one to turn to for many people. I think they haven't had something in place where they haven't been in crisis. So when they reach a point where they really are struggling, they haven't got that person to go back to and say, right now I need that kind of support. I think as well, the nature of dementia, depending on a diagnosis, depending on your situation, depending on your caring, it's different for everyone. We always say that it's a unique situation for that person caring, that person with dementia. And a lot of people have a real, and a survey, it came through loud and clear, that people were actually quite terrified and they felt very much in the dark about dementia and what would happen next. They were desperate to know, not generically, oh, there's 10 stages or, oh, this might happen, but what was going to happen to them, like in the next hour, in the next day? And I think depending on the stage people were caring at, crisis could be the person they're caring for has had a fall and they might be quite frail themselves and not know what to do. It might be that person's mood changed quite dramatically and they're very fearful of what that means and what that means for their future caring. So crisis can mean lots of different things. It might be the person's wandered off. And these people and these carers are desperately trying to do everything they can, keep everything on the road, make sure things are good and safe for the person they're caring for, and curveballs are being chucked at them all the time. So I think crisis can be so many different things. And I think you're right. It's really stark. That stat has gone up since last year when we asked it. And also within that question, we asked, and how many times are you reaching crisis? The number of people, of carers reaching crisis more often has also gone up within that. So, what I think that really is evidence of is that the support, like you say, isn't there. And therefore, when people are in crisis, they're still potentially not accessing the support they need then, and then they're reaching crisis points again and again. So it is quite stark.
You know, as you were saying, all part of the dementia story and the fact that everybody is different, and also, you know, things progress, you're on a dementia journey, and the support you need is different at all those points, isn't it? Whereas maybe some other carers who are caring with other conditions, the support you need might be relatively constant. And you think that's a problem in the fact, well, I guess it is a problem in the fact that dementia is so, if I can use the word, variable.
No, absolutely. I think that is a problem. I think it's something that is quite surprising if you look at it from external perspective, that something as severe as dementia, that, you know, is, there is no cure for, there is no, there's not even really medication apart from the early stages, which can delay some of the symptoms. The medication tends to be quite sort of limited, but carers are therefore just given a leaflet and told to kind of have a read and let them know, you know, if there's any problems in the future, sort of thing. I think it is a very challenging condition, and I think we haven't really got to grips with just the scope and scale of the different diagnoses and what that means, and the different sort of potential pathways, as you said, that a person with dementia might go through, and nobody can predict it really. So that is a real challenge for carers.
And also, you know, talking to the scale of the problem, one stat that really stood out for me is that 29% of carers have provided care for over 5 years. And I think it's kind of no wonder that, you know, people get forgotten.
Yes, absolutely. And I think going back a little bit to your previous question as well, I don't think carers are invited to actually express what they prepared to do. So I think carers come at caring often, and specifically with dementia carers, it's quite common that they'll see it very much because it's quite gradual sometimes at the first, you know, first instance signs of kind of some concern. And they might just take on a bit more. They might take on a bit more of the household finances. They might be guiding the person a bit more or be a bit more aware of them. They're not considering that as a caring responsibility. They're considering that as a, I'm a spouse, I'm the daughter, I'm, you know, and so it kind of evolves before they know. And at no point, and really they should be, every carer should be invited to say, what would you be prepared to do? And kind of invited to think about what might be ahead. And it could be about giving medication. It might be that you've got someone who's a bit older, or like I said before, a bit frail, who couldn't do the lifting, you know, and that could be something that's quite commonly needed later on. And so you do see a difference in the survey when you've had someone who's quite new to caring, maybe cared 1 or 2 years, to caring 5 years and then longer. And then you do start seeing comments about concern about their own health and what would happen if something happens to them, and worries about, you know, how long they're going to be doing this. And like you say, dementia, it can be, I mean, almost how long is a piece of string. Even once you've got the diagnosis, it could be a year or two, but it could be 10 or 15. I've even, you know, talk to carers who cared for 20 years. And again, it's not something that people can really signpost right from the beginning how that's going to work. So very daunting for someone taking that on.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast, where I'm chatting to my guest this week, Helen Piper from Dementia Carers Count.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that comes out of that is actually the definition of what is a carer. But and also the fact that you would think that someone would give carers an assessment. I've got to say, the one where my jaw dropped to the ground looking at the statistic was only 51% have had a carer's assessment.
Yeah. I mean, the carer's assessment came up time and again in last year's survey as well. In fact, actually, dementia carers are seemingly, that's a quite a higher number than actually Carers UK survey, for example, has signposted for carers assessments. But we asked the question a bit differently, and we kind of talked about, have you ever had an assessment and do you know what that is? So 51% said they've had an assessment. Bear in mind, they might have just had the one. 30% didn't hadn't, and I think it was something like 19% didn't know what that was. So it's not enough. It's not good enough. And those that had the assessment, a percentage were telling us that they weren't then given a care plan. So they'd gone through the assessment process, they'd expressed what they were concerned about and talked about what they wanted to do and what their interests were perhaps and what the person with dementia needed. And then they weren't told what was the outcome. They weren't given a plan. Some were given a plan, and within 2 weeks their situation had changed. The plan was irrelevant because the person with dementia might have, you know how it works with dementia, you might be quite stable, and then with, you know, you might just have a bit of a dip, and your condition suddenly, the needs change and everything changes. And they were telling us, you know, at that point the assessment didn't make sense. And other people were telling us that they would say, oh, you know, I like to take walks, or I get stressed at a particular time, and the assessment would reflect that, but without any backup. So there wouldn't be kind of, and this is the service that will support you through this time. It was just, yeah, that's what you've told us. We've kind of heard you, not good enough, you know. And for many carers, that's the one and only time they have that assessment. They don't get it reviewed. So it is really patchy. And then, you know, of course we hear good practice. Of course we see carers who say, actually, this was the moment where it unlocked a lot of support for me. It's just, that's not the common thing that carers are telling us. You know, it's not the likely thing that people are telling us. So it is. And I think the thing with carers' assessments, it's such a great point at which you could support a carer. And even if they're not desperately in need at that point, really help them to understand caring, understand where they can go if they do need help in the future. You know, it's such a good moment really to kind of communicate with the carer and start sort of signposting them early to avoid those crisis points.
And that, you know, there's no statutory requirement to identify carers, surely that is something that would help, because you know, it's coming across really, you know, it's the forgotten army out there. There's no statutory responsibility to identify anybody. Nobody's actually told you what it takes to be a carer and what a carer is, and yet you're expected to have a carer's assessment, and you know, a lot of people don't even know one exists. So it's
I've heard carers saying they thought it was a test. And they were really worried that they'd. So I think for some people, and, you know, it should be said, of course, for some people, they see it as an honour, a privilege. You know, caring for them is something they want to do. But they want support doing it. Like, they don't want to just be then left on their own to, you know, to kind of flounder and worry and perhaps not be giving the best support that they could be. So, but some people would be sort of looking at an assessment and thinking, you just want to take them away. You know, are they going to end up in a care home? I hear again and again. And I think, you know, just to give a shout out to care homes, that I think that's a, you know, quite a negative way of looking at a care home. I think care homes can be a really positive choice to make. But I do think there is a kind of almost a concern amongst carers from quite early on that, oh dear, that's what it means. You know, because they're not really encouraged or supported to think about, right, longer term in the home, what care can you provide? What support do you need to do that? So I think you're absolutely right. I think carers need to be identified, even if they don't see themselves as carers. A GP or a healthcare professional does recognise what a carer is and can, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going behind the back of the carer by telling them, you know, it's very much more like a, you know, we understand the needs and maybe have that conversation, rather than, you know, telling someone they are a carer and that's what they need to identify as. It's very much more like you can recognise what someone's doing and offer them, you know, the options that they have available to them. So I just think it's sometimes a little bit easier not to go there for some people. If your role is to go in and do a particular job or have a particular intervention, it can be, you know, it can be quite tempting not to kind of start going, well, what else? Let's look at your holistic needs. You know, what else have you got on? Who have you got around you to support you? You know, and ask those questions. And I think, you know, healthcare professionals should be supported and resourced to be able to do that a lot more.
And I think I probably know the answer to this, but do you think that, you know, everything should be made much more accessible? I was just thinking there about, you know, get a sheet of paper on it with carer's assessment written on the top. Surely if you put carers' analysis of needs or something, some other wording, first of all, it would make it, you know, make it a lot less daunting. And, you know, I'm small time in this, but I've been on the end of trying to get a blue badge from a mother-in-law who was living with dementia and going through 40 pages of a form that didn't actually even mention the D word anywhere in it. And there are so many other forms and everything is so formal, but surely when you're up to your eyes in it as a carer, you want stuff that's accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have seen different councils, and here's another classic problem, that different councils, some have amazingly good practice, really have thought about it, you know, even to the point of co-production with carers about the carers assessment, what it could look like. They've gone back to the Care Act and gone, like, what are our legal duties? So they're not avoiding that, but they're saying, right, okay, so all we need to know is that we need to ask a carer certain things, but we can do it in a different way, you know. And I've seen some brilliant examples where it won't be a form, they won't sit there ticking boxes, they will ask the carer to almost hold up cue cards of words that resonate, and it might be depressed, or it might be sad, or it might be worried, or it might be, you know, up for the, you know, different words that might reflect how, and all they have to do is select these few words that kind of takes them to another page that might, you know what I mean? And so it's something that's really thought through in terms of what a carer has time for, what they might understand. You know, the questions could be quite tricky and confusing for a carer. And also, I think a lot of times it's how it's done. If the person you're caring for is in the room with you while you're having a carer's assessment, that's really tricky. It might be that's what your choice is, but that should be taken into account. And I think it's things like looking at how the context is, what people's understanding, and what, like you say, what the purpose is. So it's here to help. You know, that's the idea. So if carers went in with that knowledge and that it was being led by them, I think a lot more carers would be seeking it out probably as well, and possibly a bit happier to call themselves carers. You know, it makes a bit more sense. Otherwise, really, why? Why do you need that label if it's not actually going to, you know, do anything different? So, you know, I think the carers assessment is a really key instrument for carers.
Yeah, I think, you know, consistency is a word we've already used a few times in this conversation. And kind of leaping ahead a little bit to the recommendations. I mean, one of the recommendations is a carer's strategy. And again, another thought from me, well, I thought, well, there must be one, mustn't there? But there isn't.
No. And in fact, in Scotland and Wales, they're at different stages of development, and they've got a lot further than England in terms of, I think they've, you know, laid out framework, discussed and consulted on the content. They've looked at, you know, like how they would want to deliver it, but not implemented yet, you know, but really good progress made. In England, we don't have anything like that. There's no intention to have that either, as far as I know. And I think it's a real problem, because I think a strategy, it just offers another thing that carers can go back to and say, but you need to provide this. But it says here, and it's something that, you know, carers can use. It's another bit of armor for carers to, you know, when they're mustering all the energy they've got to fill in that 40-page form and they're getting rejected because they used a word slightly wrong or it didn't quite match what the, you know, the actual requirements. I think something like a strategy that says you should be prioritized because of your caring responsibilities, or the GP might, you know, need to do X because you are a carer. I think that really helps. And I think it is something that's needed. And I think, you know, local authorities under-resourced and, you know, going through quite tricky times at the moment, I think it needs to be as easy as possible for local authorities to also support and prioritise carers in a way that kind of joins up, but also lets them know that carers are a priority in their area.
Yeah, and you know, I guess there comes another problem, kind of, you know, broadening out on a national level, and we've got two organisations that are responsible for health and social care. So we've got the NHS looking after their health, we've got local authorities dealing with social care, And again, just a small part, personal experience. I had the personal experience of my mother-in-law, the NHS, wanting to get rid of her because she was bed-blocking, and the local authority not wanting to take her on because they didn't have the budget. And suddenly, as a carer, you're kind of stuck in the middle here. And on a general theme, it just seems to me, and whether this will ever happen, if you had one organisation dealing with a whole lot, surely it'd be a lot easier.
I'm sorry to hear that. I think that's such a common experience. And I kind of hate all those terms because I mean, bed blocking, that term has been going around for decades and it doesn't describe what, I mean, I personally remember my grandmother being quite upset because she was like, I shouldn't be here. This is obviously many years ago, but she was like, I shouldn't be here. I'm bed blocking. And it was almost like she felt like she was responsible. And I think it's a terrible phrase. I think it's, you know, I think it's a very, it kind of masks some quite complicated situations about why there is such a difficulty in moving someone from, you know, a hospital care setting to something residential. It feels like it should be focused on. I know there's some funding to kind of, you know, to really look at this. But I think without the health and social care systems really being a lot more united, like seamless, contribution and, you know, data sharing and anything that would help those kind of journeys across the system. Because, of course, you know, anyone who's been using the systems, they don't differentiate. They don't want to think, oh, well, I'm in a healthcare setting now, but now I'm in adult social care and now I'm using something. And nobody really thinks like that. And yet they are told that again and again. So they have to explain what their situation is again and again. And they have to, you know, and one of the things I have heard from carers through the survey and, you know, different times is sometimes, you know, when they've been a carer for some time, and sometimes if they're feeling quite, you know, if they're able to, and they feel quite assertive about, you know, these are my rights, this is what I can do, they get co-opted into almost like a professional care setting. So, you know, they have professionals talking about the person they're caring for and their kind of clinical needs with the person caring, kind of almost in a way that doesn't respect the carer's role as the partner, the spouse, the daughter. And I think it's because there's this kind of lack of joined up. So everyone's kind of, it's very fragmented, and it really is the carer that ends up providing those links and providing that support where it should be seamlessly done through health and social care, with the carer being involved and participating but not co-opted. You know, there should be sort of that kind of line, I think, for carers.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My guest on the podcast this week is Helen Piper from Dementia Carers Count. You know, a bit of a drastic solution, but got me thinking. I was reading the report this morning and I thought, you know, if you mentioned budget, and, you know, wouldn't it be nice if the budget figures for the NHS and social care actually showed the real cost? So actually showed the cost that is being saved by carers, or even shove that amount and say it actually costs this much plus this, which is what the carers, this is why we need a big budget. It seems to me that the budgets are cut at the moment and you've got this brilliant bunch of volunteers over on the left-hand side here that are saving billions. And so that gives you the excuse not to actually put enough money into the system.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. I do tend to agree. I think it's quite a big problem to crack. So I think it's quite convenient to kind of talk about carers in that, thank you, you're doing an amazing job. You are incredible people. Now move on. You know, I think if politicians acknowledged, you know, so the caring force in the UK, I think it's equal to the NHS are the figures. So, you know, what we spend on the NHS, carers are providing in social care. That makes sense. So, you know, in terms of saving the treasury, there's a lot of work that carers are doing that couldn't be borne by, you know, central government, local authority funding. It just wouldn't. And I think as well, where the support is really fragmented now and really kind of not there, what we're seeing is much more carers reaching crisis points, and that's when the government and local authorities have to react. And of course it's more expensive, but that's where their attention is. We hear from carers saying, you know, I reached crisis point. Some are saying it took 6 weeks even in that case to get a social work appointment, but others are saying I got the best care and support. It was wonderful. As soon as I was smiling again, the care went. Like, it was like, well, now you're not in crisis, so you won't need this, this, and this. And that person was only reaching an even keel because of that support. So I think there's a real problem with not valuing care and what that contributes, what not looking at the cost of a carer reaching crisis and perhaps not even being able to continue to care, and then not really looking at their budgets and thinking, okay, if we had to take this into account, we'd be in trouble if every carer reached crisis. You know, it makes more sense to think about supporting a carer rather than not and letting them reach crisis. But at the moment, we don't have that long-term thinking, really, I don't think, across the system, so...
Yeah, I do. You know, I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, it's a lovely quote in the report I'm just looking at now that says carers are invisible to most of the authorities. Would be nice if you're known as a caregiver. If sometimes you're asked, how are you? Can we do anything to make life easier? And, you know, there's a little thing in the report as well, which it talks about just small gestures. And that's a small gesture. You know, we're in a technological age here where an email takes 30 seconds, a phone call takes a couple of minutes or whatever. So there's really no excuse for not doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think actually that's wider. And one of the things I think we bring out in the report is there was a sense from carers that it was healthcare professionals, it was government, but it was also community. Like, even to their family and friends, there was either... For some, there was a stigma. They were, because it might be about the fear factor of dementia. You call it the D word. I think it's really interesting because I kind of tend to agree. When I first started working at Dementia Carers Count, of course, I was aware of dementia. I've got family experience. But also, I think we used to talk 20 years ago about the C word. And then so much was done with cancer and research, and it became almost like this battle against cancer and we're going to beat it. And, you know, there was the mentality just changed. And I feel like that's what dementia needs. It needs that. It needs, because I think there's a lot of fear around dementia. I think it is a terminal diagnosis. So when you have that diagnosis, that is scary. When you couple that with there's not much at the moment that kind of gives you that kind of, hey, but if we try this new medication, if we do this, there's not a lot. I know there's a lot of money going around research at the minute and, you know, fingers crossed, but at the moment you're facing quite an uncertain future, you know. And so I think there's that. I think people have a stigma because someone with dementia, their behavior changes. They might react quite unexpectedly. It might be, you know, the different things. It might be, I don't mean to be kind of everyone with dementia, and I think we've said it's all very unique to each individual. Some people will have quite a gradual experience, others really won't, and they will have quite a lot of up and down. So I think for the carer, I think they felt that they weren't being respected and understood and seen by professionals and, you know, by decision makers, but also in their own communities. They felt quite limited. Some talked about losing friends because they hadn't got time anymore. But they talked about it not being very well understood. They talked about it being hidden. You got the feeling that some felt like they shut the front door and their life was happening and they couldn't ever tell anyone outside. And, you know, there was a lot of if only people could understand. And I think that's something that as an organisation for dementia carers, we want to kind of get out there and stop carers being invisible, as the report says, but really to kind of communicate this is what carers are experiencing. Because actually for many carers, they're too busy, they're exhausted, they're stressed, and some aren't able, don't want to be doing that, but they do appreciate that understanding. I think, you know, feeling still part of the community, feeling that people are, you know, respect what they do and are, you know, and maybe want to help as well. Because I think, you know, with something like dementia, it can be people in the community, shopkeepers, bus drivers who end up getting involved in that care, you know, because a person might go wandering, because, you know, different things. And so I think it's important for carers to have those connections and reduce that isolation.
Yeah, I think it's very important, local community. I've got a local example here. I've got a lady living across the road from me who's living with dementia, and her son and daughter actually have written everybody in our close a nice little letter saying, look, this is what's happened, and if you see mum out wandering, here's our telephone numbers, don't worry, and whatever. And I thought, that's really nice. You know, we should all be doing that. That's, really,
that's
really
a lovely
positive
idea. Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I think that's another way also, you know, acknowledging what might happen and getting ahead of it a little bit. And perhaps even, I mean, it obviously with you being a neighbour and everything, but potentially you've got neighbours then who will say, oh, no worries. And, you know, if you want a cup of tea or if you want a break, let me know. Or if you need your shopping done this week, because, you know, that kind of thing can be so invaluable. Like you said, it's small gestures, but I think just so very, very helpful for carers. Absolutely. I think that's a lovely, lovely idea. Yeah.
Well, we're almost coming to an end, and we've got a little bit of a positive note there. I mean, you know, reading through the report, you've got to say there is a heck of a lot of work to be done. But, you know, any glimmers of hope you can send us out with?
I think, don't quote me on this, this is going to be one of those predictions that fails. I really do feel like, I know that it's quite doomy about the, you know, what we've got resource-wise and everything else, but I feel like there is a change. I think it's way overdue, but I really feel that people are going to start talking about social care, because I think there is an acknowledgement that health is in crisis with the waiting list and everything, and you cannot address the issues facing the health service without addressing social care. And I think I get a sense that there is much more impetus than there has been in a few years to kind of to tackle this. I think so. My hope is that it is recognised. And if it isn't, I will be there with dementia carers at Downing Street, making sure it is understood and someone tackles it, because I think it's way over time. So my hope is just that it's having its day and it is recognised. And I think social care as a whole needs to be really focused on. And I feel like that will be on the agenda.
Well, fingers crossed that occurs. It's an excellent report. I do, say to everybody, just get a copy, sit down, look at it. And hopefully, you know, in the future time, we can do something about it. Thanks, Helen, for being my guest. Been absolutely fascinating.
Fabulous. Would you mind? Thank you so much. And sorry to interrupt. Would you mind if I just give, we have a carer support service. So I just wanted to also flag that if anyone does have any issues they want to discuss with us, and it might be a crisis, but it might be a query, it might be a concern, or something's changed, if you just want to get in touch with us, we have a support line. So if it's okay that I give the number, 0800 652 1102. So 0800 652 1102. And that's for anyone caring for someone with dementia. And it's free service.
Excellent. When this goes out, we'll put that on our social media accounts as well. So, Helen, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks to Helen and everyone there at Dementia Carers Count. You can access the survey Invisible at the website www.dementiacarers.org.uk, and that UK helpline number once again is 0800 652 1102. That's it for another podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk.